We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. The next 40 minutes of the program we're spending with Ken Samples, as we will all this week during our series with him on worldviews. Yesterday it was the Christian worldview. Well, today we kind of go to its opposite. Or maybe it's not its complete opposite. It is a strange thing. You hear the term naturalism, and it might not be self-evident what we're going to talk about in naturalism. Natural? This seems pretty good. Nature's not a bad word. I wonder if it's misnamed. Usually we know it through evolutionary theory, this naturalism. But we're going to spend the next 40 minutes examining it as a worldview with Ken Samples. He's Vice President of Theological and Philosophical Apologetics at Reasons to Believe, based in Pasadena, California, and author of the book A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test. Ken, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Or our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Ken, is it misnamed naturalism? It strikes me that many people would hear that and not immediately be able to grasp the basic worldview that we're going to describe here.
Yeah, that probably is. There is some truth in that. I think that naturalism really has at its heart a number of important ideas or points. Naturalism certainly believes that the natural, material, physical universe is here and is important, and thus we need to study it scientifically. But I think what really characterizes naturalism is that that's the sole reality. There's nothing above the natural universe. Maybe even a better characterization would be that naturalists are anti-supernaturalists. There is absolutely no supernatural. Everything is either material or physical or can be explained because of physical things.
See, I was thinking of the term materialism, but of course that often gets confused with kind of the materialism we talk about in society, as opposed to the only thing there is matter.
Yeah, and a lot of naturalists would affirm materialism, meaning that everything is material or everything is reducible to matter and its component elements. Although there are some naturalists who are uncomfortable with materialism, I think largely because they see it as a potential defeater. It's difficult to explain the mind and non-physical things, but we're kind of stuck with naturalism, but then we have to give it some careful explanation.
Okay, so how would you describe it in a nutshell as a worldview, naturalism?
Well, I would say that naturalism is the perspective that says the physical, material universe is all there is. There is no God. There is no supernatural realm or reality. The theory, of course, holds that life on this planet, life in this universe must be naturalistic, materialistic in orientation. Therefore, it's going to put a strong emphasis upon evolutionary theory. It's going to put an emphasis upon humanism, meaning that humans are the highest level on the evolutionary ladder. Therefore, they have some significance or value, and definitely no religious orientation.
So, from the outset, Is it safe to assume that God, in any shape, matter, or form, even the concept of God, is excluded here?
Yes. Most naturalists would categorically describe themselves as atheists. Some might take a lighter position of agnosticism, but really any kind of description of God, whether that God be theistic or pantheistic or any orientation about God. Certainly an infinite, eternal, spiritual God like the God of the Bible does not exist.
You say that it's important to note of naturalism that it shares, at least in kind of a basic framework, something with an Eastern worldview, and that is what's called monism. What do you mean?
Yeah, that's important. I mean, you know, we believe in monotheism, and the Greek word monos is a word for one. So monism is the idea that there is one ultimate reality, one fundamental reality. Now, in pantheism, which is the view that that one reality is God, in naturalism, you have a type of monism because they would say that one reality, even if they can't fully describe it or explain it, it is the natural world. There's no supernatural world, so everything is one, and that one is the natural universe that we live in. So it's a kind of different type of, there's really kind of two types of monism. You can be pantheistic, or you can be materialistic or naturalistic.
Some other isms are attached to this naturalism that you point out. Among them, and let's be as careful as we can to define this. We talked earlier about materialism. Would the naturalist say that not only is the only thing in the universe matter in its various constituent parts, as you said, but ultimately that is all there is in terms of meaning in the universe?
Yeah, very, very important. Materialism, of course, is not a, you know, a house at the beach and a house in the mountains and two jaguars in the garage. Materialism is the view that ultimate reality is composed of physical matter. Many naturalists would gravitate in that direction. As I mentioned, some are a little leery. They think maybe non-physical realities like the mind might emerge kind of spontaneously, and so they're a little reluctant to kind of bring it back to that kind of stark materialism. But yeah, naturalism has a connection, and as a critic of naturalism, I would simply say to my naturalist friends, and I have colleagues who are naturalists who teach philosophy, I often say to them, look, if you don't believe in God and you believe the physical universe is the sole reality, then what is there other than matter? I think that at some level a naturalist is pushed to hold some type of materialism.
So is there any objective meaning in this? I mean, and I know they would say it's organized in a certain way through cause and effect, but is there true information, true meaning, or only apparent information, apparent meaning to the naturalist?
That is the $64,000 question, because, you know, I would assert as a critic of naturalism that, look, we live here, but the naturalist world says that we're all going to die. Ultimately, humanity will go extinct. Even later than that, the universe will come apart. And the universe will die an entropy death. Is there any kind of objective meaning and purpose and significance? Can will anybody know or care, or can anybody come out of that with ultimate meaning? I don't see how that's possible. Now, some naturalists would agree with me. Other naturalists would say, well, maybe there's no meaning to life, but maybe there can be meaning in life by the choices you make. To me, that sounds still incredibly subjective, but in one sense, that's all they've got.
Okay, when we come back, I want to explore that a little bit, because it seems to me to be, at least in kind of the way the average person thinks about it, the Achilles heel here, Ken, of materialism or naturalism. If someone's, you live your everyday life as though there is meaning, there is information, and if there isn't, then it seems to me you're consigned to kind of a nihilism. You're just going through the motions, acting as though these things do mean things, as though you mean something, as though your life means something. But it's all a contrivance, because information can't spring up out of a lack of information. A meaning can't spring up out of meaninglessness. 1 minute before our break.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have touched the Achilles heel. Naturalism, in my mind, it is a potentially self-defeating system, because if all there is the physical universe, and if we have evolved from animal species, even Darwin was very worried about the idea of whether he could trust his mind if his mind had come from the mind of animals. And if there is no ultimate purpose, no life after death, no ultimate judge, then is there anything that we can significantly call purpose and justice and meaning? And couldn't many people then say, aren't we left with a type of nihilism, that there's no ultimate meaning? I think that's a fair critique of the naturalist worldview.
Ken Samples is our guest. It's part two of our five-part daily series with him on worldviews. Today we're talking about naturalism. He's vice president of theological and philosophical apologetics at Reasons to Believe, based in Pasadena, California, and author of the book A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test. We're giving away that book, A World of Difference, to listeners with the best questions or comments. Our call-in number, live this Tuesday afternoon, March the 24th, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, open for your questions and comments right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, Ken points out that one of the features of the naturalist worldview is scientism, not science, but scientism. We'll find out what the difference between those two are. And I keep coming back to this. I mean, are we allowed to live as though there were meaning when there really isn't? It seems an honest, clear-eyed view of the world, if it's going to be a worldview, we'll say, look, there is no meaning if there isn't. We'll be right back.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Beaks or flower shapes, which came first?
Answers with Ken Ham, founder of the new High-Tech Creation Museum near Cincinnati, Ohio.
An article in the journal Science attempted to explain which came first, the shape of the beak of a hummingbird or the shape of the flowers. Flowers, of course, provide the birds with nectar. Now, on the Caribbean island of St. Lucia, scientists believe the flower shape evolved first and then the shape of the hummingbird's beak after that. But on the neighboring island of Dominica, they believe the hummingbird's beak evolved first. So why are they so confused? Well, because they're starting with the wrong assumption that evolution's true. When reading Genesis, it's obvious that when God created, he would have created some plants with long, slender flowers. This was on day 3 of the creation week. On day 5, he created all of the birds of the air, including hummingbirds with their long, slender beaks, to drink nectar from the flowers created only 2 days earlier. So starting with the conviction that the Bible's true makes the answer easy. God designed the flowers and the hummingbirds, just as the evidence clearly shows.
Many people ask us, what's our best evangelistic tool to share the Christian faith? Well, I think that'd be our DVD, The Last Adam. This dramatic video shares the last few days of Christ's ministry on earth, including his resurrection. It's so well done, we'd like to offer it to you for your donation of any amount today. Call toll-free at 1-888-89-ANSWERS. That's 1-888-89-ANSWERS.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, my people are destroyed by lack of knowledge. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.
You're listening to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're into part two of our worldview series with Ken Samples, talking about naturalism as a worldview. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. And our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Here's Ann in St. Louis. Hi, Ann.
Hi. My question is it too simplistic to ask from where does matter come?
It's a great question. Thank you very much, Ann. What about it, Ken?
It's a great question, Ann, because, you know, even the one of the distinguished philosophical atheist, Anthony Kenney, has said that if you're an atheist, if you're a naturalist, and you believe that the universe had a beginning, that's often referred to as the Big Bang, then you have to believe that all matter, energy, space, and time came into being from nothing by no one. So that's a great question. I mean, if the fundamental reality is matter, and we know that matter came into being, then where did it come from, and why is it here? Those are very good questions.
You point out that one of the features of naturalism is a scientism, not a scientific method or a scientific worldview, but scientism. What's the difference between scientism and science?
Well, scientism is a natural part of the naturalist worldview. They say the material physical universe is all there is. Therefore, the best way of studying that material physical universe is through science, and thus physics and chemistry and biology are critical ways of understanding that world. Of course, what goes into all of that idea is they would say that the knowledge that comes from the sciences has a privileged position, and thus the best way or the only way of really knowing about reality comes through science.
So it's not just, as you said before, it's not just the best way. It is, in fact, to the naturalist, ultimately the only way that you can know anything.
That's right. It has a definite privileged position, and of course, then it raises question. Well, what about ethical questions? What about aesthetic questions? What about moral, theological questions? Well, those issues have very little relevance at all in a naturalistic world.
And yet the naturalist, I mean, you're right, the naturalist should say that questions of should or ought or good or evil are like talking about unicorns, something that doesn't really exist and is therefore irrelevant, but they actually act as though there's a difference between right and wrong. Are they being consistent?
Well, that again is another touching the Achilles heel of naturalism. Naturalists want and need to talk about objective meaning, objective morality, values in life, but given their kind of metaphysical stance, it puts them in a very, very awkward position. I remember reading the debate between the Catholic philosopher Frederick Copleston and the naturalistic philosopher Bertrand Russell. And Copleston asked Russell, well, was it wrong what the commandant at Auschwitz did to the Jews? And Russell couldn't come out and say, yeah, it was wrong, it was evil, because he knew at that point if he adjudicated something to be bad or evil, then he had to defend that system. And so, Todd, you know, one of the critical questions I think we can ask of everybody's worldview is it livable? Can we be consistent within it? I think naturalism has some very serious problems with that question.
So let's see. The naturalist believes that there's nothing but matter ultimately, or matter in its constituent parts, and the information or the meaning that we may gestalt from the world around us is only a phenomenon of our minds. Who then is man, according to the naturalist worldview?
Yeah, very good. Well, I think they would say that man is the result of time plus chance but plus natural processes. I think most naturalists would say it is incredibly improbable, but an amazing thing that human beings have evolved to a point of having the minds that they have where they can carry out the incredible activities that they do. But man is a purely natural creature. His origin lies in the material universe and in evolution from the animals that preceded him. And therefore, man's destiny will be the grave. It will be death. which will be extinction.
Has the forefront, the avant-garde of physics and science begun to show the tattered ends of the naturalist worldview? I'm thinking here in particular about quantum physics, where those who study these remarkable phenomena that apparently, you know, describe how the world really functions are coming up with fanciful tales to explain the existence of the universe, how it seems to work in a physical way, that is kind of shifting the foundation stones under old-style naturalism.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, I like to say that this isn't your father's naturalism anymore. Naturalists these days are confronted with a couple different things. I think one of the biggest challenges is this question of consciousness. How do we explain human consciousness? How is it possible that something that doesn't think would then cause something that does think? In philosophy, we sometimes refer to this as the problem of consciousness or the problem of mind and body. Many scientific naturalists who are experts in these areas would say this is an inexplicable reality. It is one of the most difficult areas. But some have begun to say that maybe the universe did have a beginning, and maybe these profound realities we discover in life, maybe they were caused by something beyond our universe. And so some have begun to speculate that maybe we're one universe among many different types of universes, and maybe we have all of the carefully fine-tuned scientific laws to allow for life because maybe there's nearly an infinite number of universes. My comment at that point is, you are no longer a naturalist. You are now a meta-naturalist. You have postulated things beyond the material physical universe, and some naturalists are already doing that.
Okay, this confuses me then, Ken, because it's not only that they want to postulate other universes in order to say, well, this is why we exist the way we do here. If I understand what the quantum physicists are saying, at least popularly writing, they're saying we have to postulate other universes, in fact, an infinite number of them, to get the universe we live in today.
That's right. That's right. Now, you know, sometimes this is called the multi-worlds hypothesis. Sometimes it's called the multiverse. But it's definitely something, I think, of a category difference than the old style of naturalism that says, you know, this physical universe is all there is, that's it. Now we have opened up a realm of speculative mathematics and physics and quantum theory that says, well, the only way we could have gotten here is because of some mechanism out there that popped us into existence. And then I think all of our fundamental philosophical questions apply. Where did that mechanism come from? Where did intelligence come from? And can you observe these multiple universes with any kind of scientific discovery? And at that point, I think the multi-worlds hypothesis or multiverse begins to be a very incoherent theory.
You've got about 90 seconds here before our break, Ken, and we'll pick up on the other side of the break. Let's start putting it to the test. Where does naturalism, in your opinion, receive, although it fails ultimately, where does it receive high marks?
Well, I do think it has some areas in which it has merit. I mean, naturalism says that there is a real material physical universe out there, that it has value and we should study it and human beings can benefit from scientific study. That is a very important point. Most naturalists are willing to argue that things like the laws of logic and principles of mathematics have real value. This is very much unlike a Eastern mystical pantheistic worldview where sometimes we're not even sure whether the universe is a reality or an illusion in our minds. So certainly naturalism has some concrete elements. And, you know, if we think of Occam's razor, the famous Catholic logician in the Middle Ages, naturalism has a certain simplicity to it or a simpleness to it. So those are some of the areas where I would give it high marks.
Well, when we come back, we'll continue to put naturalism as a worldview to the worldview test with Ken Samples. I want to hear from you. This break is a great time to call, and we've got 10 more minutes with Ken Samples on naturalism after the break. 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MYIE. You can email your questions or comments to us at talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. Listeners with the best questions or comments, as we talk with Ken, we'll get a copy of the book, A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test. And we'll put naturalism to the test. Is it coherent? Can it explain reality? Does it pass the sniff test when it comes to human, the endeavor of the human person to find meaning and dignity in this life? Does it explain what needs to be explained? Does it answer the questions? It claims it can answer naturalism. Ken Samples is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Just a drop of water in an endless sea. All we do crumbles to the ground, though we refuse to see. Dust in the wind.
We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for the next fiscal year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2009. Simply go to the sponsors page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. Thanks for your support.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology. issuesetc.org.
It's
we're talking about naturalism as a worldview, putting it to the test with Ken Samples, part of our five-part daily series on worldviews. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Ken, you say in your book that naturalism fails abysmally when it comes to what you call the existential test. Does it adequately address the internal needs of the human being? The naturalist might say, hey, we're naturalists. We don't have to answer that question. Our worldview doesn't have to answer those needs. How would you respond?
Well, I think I would say then go ahead and admit that, meaning that if you don't feel you have to provide meaning, purpose, and significance to individuals' lives, then say that and admit that you are embracing a nihilistic system. Admit that you can't answer that question. I mean, the reality is that human psychology indicates that what people are looking for is hope and purpose and meaning and significance, and that mental illness is often the result of people who don't feel like they have hope in their life. And how do we cope with suffering and all of the challenges of life? So, you know, I would, I guess I'm looking for some candid honesty about what naturalism can explain and what it can't explain.
You say that it generally lacks explanatory power, that it doesn't adequately explain reality, period. What do you mean?
Well, where did the universe come from? Why is that universe so fine-tuned? Why is it that we find so much intelligence in the world? I think an adequate worldview, a viable worldview, has got to explain things like mathematics and logic. I remember taking a physics course at Concordia University in Irvine as a senior to finish up my science requirement. And one thing that struck me in the class that I was in was, you know, if God exists, then I know why mathematics works. I know why it corresponds to physical reality, because God created the universe, he created our minds, and he networked them together. But what if there's no God? Then why should math work? I think these are the kinds of things, both the universe and its complexity, but also the abstractions of life, math, logic, and morality. I think these are areas where naturalism strains to provide an adequate explanation.
So it's as simple as, why does, in the universe such as we have it, if there is only matter, why does 1 plus 1 equal 2? Why doesn't 1 plus 1 equal something else or something different every time?
Yes, because, you know, in order for science to work, logic and mathematics must be valid. Your mind must be able to give you true beliefs about the physical world. You have to be able to trust your senses. There has to be a real world out there. Scientists have so many philosophical pre-commitments, and I think an adequate worldview has to provide explanation. It can't just have this knee-jerk, well, science works. Well, why does it work? And what worldview provides the best basis for science to work as it does? I think naturalism, again, is in a tough spot on those scores.
Can naturalism explain the common human experience, or at least what seems to be the common human experience of an objective morality? Is there any place in naturalism's worldview for objective reality?
That is just so important. You know, why, if God does not exist and we are the product of billions of years of naturalistic evolution, I mean, is it wrong for Hitler to kill the Jews, you know, or is it any different than maybe killing 6 million mosquitoes? Where do people get inherent dignity and value? I mean, why couldn't someone like Hitler or Stalin just say, look, I believe in the survival of the fittest, and we have the strongest army, so we're going to destroy whomever we so desire. I'm not sure naturalism has any ground or foundation to say that human beings have inherent dignity and moral worth, and you shouldn't murder them.
Does naturalism answer the question? In yesterday's conversation, you and I were talking about kind of the end, the goal of the Christian worldview, that it has a, there is a progression in the Christian worldview toward an end and a goal. Does naturalism have anything corresponding to that?
I think naturalism is a philosophy of ultimate despair. Again, I'm going to die. Humanity is going to go extinct. The universe is going to grow cold because of entropy. And you know what, Todd? From a naturalistic point of view, nothing any of us thinks or speaks or does is going to change that ultimate hopeless scenario. And, you know, naturalists can be very critical of Christianity or other philosophical or religious viewpoints, but I think they are stuck with a philosophy of despair.
Let's do a bottom line then, I mean, at least in terms of an historical evaluation of where naturalism has held sway as a worldview. How has it expressed itself in human history, where it's managed to express itself?
Well, certainly, I think we begin to see the strongest expression of naturalism in the Age of Enlightenment, the Enlightenment period of the 1700s. We begin to see a number of people react to a religious Christian perspective, arguing that they're not going to take the authority of the Bible or the authority of church, but everything has to be brought under the judgment of human rationality and human reason. And I think naturalism still holds a lot of sway in the Western world, in the areas of academia. I think here in America and in Europe, naturalism is still a powerful worldview that is seen with, I think, much respect, because it's often associated with advancements in science and criticisms of religion. So it may be a small percentage of people in the world as compared to Islam or Christianity or some of these other large religious philosophies, but it is still an influential belief system.
Tomorrow we're going to be talking with you about postmodernism. Give us about a minute preview of our conversation with you tomorrow.
Postmodernism is a very important belief system. It emphasizes things like religious pluralism, you know, all religions having kind of an equal position in terms of their value or being true. It's also a belief system that emphasizes the relativistic ideas of truth and morality and language. I mean, in my day, you know, different strokes for different folks, but that idea has come kind of to the forefront in the West since the fall of the Soviet Union, and postmodernism is a belief system that's captured the minds of many people.
And from St. Louis, give us a call back and give us your mailing address. We'll send you a copy of the book, A World of Difference, by our guest, Ken Samples, Vice President of Theological and Philosophical Apologetics at Reasons to Believe, based in Pasadena, California, and author of the book, A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test. Ken, look forward to tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
It's pretty bleak, isn't it? I mean, tomorrow we'll talk about postmodernism, and we'll discover that it is equally bleak to naturalism, but naturalism is kind of bleak old school, if you think about it. It's hard to be a consistent naturalist. I mean, it's hard to actually believe consistently on a daily basis, going about your ordinary life, believing that you are nothing more than a chance conglomeration of matter and energy. A very complex one, and one at the very, very, very sharpest end of a long evolutionary sword, but nonetheless, nothing more than matter. It's hard to live that way. In fact, I would say it's impossible to live that way. Those who consistently try to live that way, consistent with the belief that we are nothing more than our parts, our pieces, and there is no meaning, rhyme, or reason to anything, much less us. People who do that tend to be sociopaths on a small or a grand scale. And you know, it's hard to blame them. If you really believe there is nothing to you or to the world around you, then just your parts, your pieces, blind chance and matter and energy, then why do anything that isn't in your immediate self-interest? Why do anything that in any way helps or serves your neighbor? Why care? Why care about yourself? Why care about someone else? Naturalism, ultimately, if it is put into practice, produces a sociopath. And he doesn't care because there really isn't any right or wrong to which he will be held accountable. It's pretty bleak, isn't it? And if only for that reason, naturalism fails, but it also fails the logic test. It fails to explain why we're here and why we're not. And why things are and why the things that are and why the things that aren't. It can't answer the question. It can't answer those questions. It can't answer the ultimate question. Who are you? Who are you before God? And of course, it leaves no place whatsoever for Jesus Christ, his cross, or his salvation. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.